Aloha, everybody, and welcome to another installment of the Pod Squad. As always, Chad Blair with Honolulu Civil Beat. And today, a very special guest, our very first Congresswoman in the Whisper Room, Colleen Hanabusa. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with this first question. When you were in Congress before, you came in 2010. Nancy Pelosi was kicked out of being Speaker because the Republicans took over, but you still had Obama as president. The Senate, I believe, was still controlled.
Still controlled by Democrats.
But here you are now. Came back, reelected last year. Now you have gone through two speakers, John Boehner and Paul Ryan, and of course, all three branches of government essentially are controlled. Just how different of a world has it been for you back then and now back in Congress?
The main difference is the fact that where you expect the, quote, the adult in the room to be the then Senate, in addition to that, the president, who would come in, and you knew no matter how crazy the bill was, 53, 54 times that we tried to repeal Obamacare, you knew it wouldn't go anywhere. Either the Senate would make sure it doesn't go anywhere, or the president would veto. So it's very different because there's no doorstop. But at the same time, one of the things when it comes to day-to-day kinds of things that you feel that you can get some kind of middle ground or common ground on, it's the good part about it is my friends are still there that were there to help me on the other side of the aisle. So getting stuff done for Hawaii, especially on the, quote, in the defense area, has not been difficult because they still remember the time that we worked together. So that part of it on issues that doesn't define a Republican from a Democrat, that kind of a, you know, line in the sand kind of thing, I think that it's still a very doable because of relationships. And it does come down to relationships.
So that's still going to continue, the support for the defense complex, which is, I think, next to tourism, pretty much a major economic provider here. That's going to go because that's a bipartisan issue.
Right. That's a bipartisan issue.
What's President Trump like? Do you think he's competent?
You know, I've had, I'm probably like you and everyone else. There are days when I think, it can't be. He can't be the president of the United States. And there are other days when I think, well, is he really that much of a manipulator and that he's able to anticipate? The one thing that so the jury's still out for me, except for one thing. I feel that if you look at it, what you will find is consistent is because I think his position as president, he knows a lot of things are going to happen before they happen. So what you will find is that a lot of the absolute craziness that he does is usually followed by something that you go, this can't be for real. But the real crazy statements, like, for example, firing everybody who's transgendered out of the military, then all of a sudden you find out what is happening to his quote, inner circle. People are getting, then all of a sudden Mueller goes in and he has two grand juries out there. And
the special prosecutor.
Right? And then there's all these different things that happen. And if you go back and you look at it, you will find that some of his most outrageous tweets precede something that you feel, what's going on? I mean, this is at least the prosecutor's working, but, you know, it kind of gets dampened by the fact that he did this crazy tweet. So that's why I'm saying that the quote, I'm still cautious about him, because if he's able to manipulate us that way, then there's something to be said about it. He's a lot more dangerous that way than he is just being absolutely crazy.
Interestingly, legislatively, of course, the House did push and finally succeed to repeal Obamacare, replace it. But then, of course, it failed in the Senate. McCain, Murkowski, Collins coming in, and it appears to be dead. Has he had any luck legislatively other than Gorsuch for the Supreme Court?
I don't think he has. And you know, now he's turned his ire on McConnell.
I mean, of all things, he attacks the Senate majority leader.
I know. And so I'm thinking, so my thing is there's going to be something else coming up. There's got to be, because for him to start this, there's no reason. I mean, he hired his wife as a Secretary of Transportation, who's supposed to do the biggest part of what he's expected to do, which is infrastructure, right? That's the greatest economic boost, he keeps telling people. he attacks the husband of the person who's supposed to get this done. So there is something else that's going on. And that's where I am with Trump.
Okay.
I feel that the first blush, yeah, the guy is, he's crazy. And I wish he would keep his mouth shut on a lot of things. But then I'm beginning to wonder whether in his mind, he's manipulated us. Think about it. He's manipulated the people of this great country, or us Democrats did such a bad job that he is president. Right?
Amazing. Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader, appointed you to the leadership team. What does that entail for you? What kind of responsibilities does that involve?
Well, I'm technically... Nancy Pelosi has decided that that we must reach out, that she must reach out, and her inner circle of the real leadership group has got to open it up, because a lot of the criticism is, and it's the same everywhere. What is the next generation? How do you bring people in? So she requested, and my colleagues in the freshman class coming in voted me, confirmed her vote. Like basically to that I am part of her, quote, leadership team. And what it means is that we have meetings weekly, maybe more than weekly. And it also gives me a seat on what is called the Steering and Policy Committee. Steering and Policy determines who sits on what committees, but it also does do specific kinds of hearings that doesn't have usually Republican cooperation, whether it's how to amend the Affordable Care Act, for example, or what's going on with the special investigation on Russia. And those are the things, because, you know, that going back to what I was saying earlier, the prosecutor is doing, in my mind, a very good job, and he's actually convened two grand juries. He sent out subpoenas, the whole thing. But you don't hear about it so much. I mean, we're watching North Korea more than anything else. But think about it. We know already every single person who has anything to do with our intelligence agencies have come out and said Russia played in our elections. But it's sort of kind of taken a back seat, and we're concentrating on Kim Jong-un's threat and the president's statement that he's loaded and ready to go. So, you know, that's what I mean, that it makes you wonder, are we being diffused and confused about what really we have to look at to make sense about what's going on in our country?
There's 435 people in the U.S. House of Representatives. The Democrats are the minority. You're from a small island in the Pacific, as Jeff Sessions might describe it.
Right.
What's your relationship with Paul Ryan, the Speaker, like? Can you go up to him and say, Mr. Speaker, or Paul, I need to talk to you about Hawaii?
You know, it's really interesting because he has been very welcoming, because I was in a special election, technically. So
you served in the House before.
Right, served. And he was the kind of guy who I would see in the elevator all the time, and he'd be listening to some new jazz group or new group. I mean, he's very...
Well, like with earphones?
With earplugs. He was a real regular guy. Personally, I was more concerned in the 2016 elections that somehow the Republicans would figure out a way to get him to run. And I was very concerned that we would not be able to beat him. You know, I won a dinner because I said that Mitt Romney was going to make him vice presidential candidate.
Oh, everybody called that one.
Yeah, everybody thought I was crazy. And I said, no, he's going to do that. Because I said, Mitt Romney, I just thought that if he became president, great. But the other thing he wanted to leave as a legacy was a potential future leader. And that's why I thought he picked Ryan. And so Paul Ryan is, to my surprise, I am not able to do what you said, but I watch him very carefully, because I think, given the nature of the majority, he's managed to remain pretty much unscathed. You know that Trump doesn't tweet about him the way he tweets about McConnell.
That's absolutely right. And what about Pelosi? There's also been talk about, you know, removing her as minority leader, although my understanding is that probably isn't going to happen. Is she vulnerable, or is she pretty solid in terms of her position?
You know, I think Nancy Pelosi is solid, and a lot of it is because, and people never think about this, but part of being the leader of the party is of the caucus is to be sure that we're able to move forward and bring the numbers in. The one thing Nancy Pelosi does better than anyone else is she's extremely focused, and I mean focused. It's like the Affordable Care Act. No one is as focused as her on it. But Nancy Pelosi can also raise money like no one else. And and I know people don't like to hear that that's very much a part of what we do, but it is a part of what we do. That's the only way you get them elected. Georgia 6, remember Georgia 6, which is Ossoff? $50 million is the estimated amount.
And the Democrats lost.
And the Democrats lost. But that's between all the different special interest groups on our side now who are supporting him, $50 million. And Nancy Pelosi is one of the key elements of being able to do that. So that's why until someone is able to replace that capacity, or if some people really believe you should just forget about it, just don't do anything about it. That's not the reality. The reality is quite to the contrary.
Just a couple more questions. You and I had this conversation a long time ago, and I didn't know this, but I wonder if it's still the case. Is it still true that there's not enough women's restrooms in the U.S. Capitol?
Right. You know, and it's, where it was is that Speaker Boehner, not Speaker Pelosi, converted I don't know whether it was a sergeant of arms room, one of their offices into the women's restroom.
Oh, you're kidding.
So we actually have a fireplace in the restroom. So you can tell you got, but that was.
Is it that cold that you have to light the fire?
During the winter months, it's nice. But I mean, that's what we had. We had nothing. We would have to go to Statutory Hall to the Lizzie Boggs rooms, basically.
That's a long walk.
That's a long walk. And that's what we needed to do to get to the restroom.
Whereas the men's, it's
the
pretty
men's
much
have,
right off
yeah,
the chamber.
Yeah, right. They have it. But yeah, no, it's so we have one, but everybody's got to kind of go to one area.
So progress can happen in Washington.
Yes, it can. And unfortunately, we got to give credit where credit is due, and it was the Republicans who gave us the restroom.
Nice to give them some tips. Two final questions. What's the most fun part about being a congresswoman?
You know, and I know people are going to think this is really strange, but what I enjoy is just the ability to learn.
Really?
And so one of the fun parts is that there are no issues and no topics that you don't get in Congress. And I think that that's just a lot of fun.
You're covering the gamut.
You cover everything. And it's not just a locality kind of issue. It's all these different issues that are out there, and then you get to learn about it. Some of it, you know, your constituents may be upset or whatever else, but the bottom line is that you get to learn. And I think that is absolutely fun. And the other thing that's fun to me is being able to interact with the level of professional staff that we have there. And I mean, like the Congressional Research Service, CRS, is phenomenal in terms of what they're able to and the depth to which they're able to do it, and the fact that certain issues are continuing with them. And the other interesting part of Congress is the Library of Congress.
Huge resource.
And you know, I tell people, it's Congress's library, so they can't deny us the opportunity to see even Thomas Jefferson's original papers, which, as you know, when the library first burnt down, that's how they replenished it. They bought Thomas Jefferson's library. I think it was for $100,000 way back when. But we can go in and see Thomas Jefferson's original.
You know, it was John F. Kennedy who famously had a welcome Nobel laureates and all these people to the White House for a dinner and said, I don't believe we've ever had such a distinguished crowd at the White House with the exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone.
That's a good statement.
Well, Colleen Hanabusa, it's just been a treat having you on the Pod Squad. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Visit us at civilbeat.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And for the Pod Squad, I'm Chad Blair. Take care and aloha.
Aloha.